right. Welcome to another episode of Take Foul. It's Saturday, December 14th, NBA Cup semifinal day, I guess, in Vegas. But for us, we are going to do a bit of a sort of bigger picture episode, kind of due to some of the conversations that are swirling around social media these days. Given that we are an NBA show, I thought it would be right to address sort of this conversation around, is the NBA dead? Is there an inherent problem with the NBA? And what are some fixes that people have proposed? And what are some fixes that we think might be, you know, better for the product or for kind of the future of the league? So a few stats to start here. ESPN viewership is down 28% from last year through November 21st. That's the big one that's being thrown around on Twitter and TikTok right now. And ESPN viewership is also down 48% from 2012. So I thought that it would be kind of best if we could go through the many things that people are saying and either sort of talk about them, see if they have any merit, and see why people might be feeling this way. And I think before we get into this discussion, I feel like this discussion ultimately like isn't for people like us who like the NBA, like watching the product of regular season games specifically, and are tuning in sort of to less maybe like important games. We're fans of our specific teams. We tune into those games as well. So I think this is more about like the casual fan, right? Like the person who is sitting down and seeing a game that is going to be on ESPN or TNT and sort of saying, maybe I won't watch that tonight, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Right, so we're taking it from the perspective of the more casual fan.
Well, I think it's more about, yeah, I think so. Yeah,
that's because, who like you're losing as viewers.
Yeah, because the majority of people aren't like us, because I would say we're in the minority of NBA viewership in terms of like, you know, how really locked in people are to like
ball grinders,
the day to day. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that David Stern has talked about in the past of like, you know, you can change anything and there'll still be like this sector of fans that will always be there. And then, but like you're at risk of losing some of the others. And that's maybe seems to be what's happening. I think the first thing I want to touch on is I do think that there is a difference in how the game is consumed, right? So younger fans, I think, are less inclined to sort of sit down and watch an entire game live on TV. Right. So they're catching up on highlights on YouTube. They're looking at Instagram to just see clips, you know, and or maybe they're even listening to a podcast and kind of keeping up with the storylines if they're more locked in, but still maybe not sort of sitting down and grinding tape, so to speak. I don't know. Like, do you think there's merit to that claim, in that like I'm not sure if the NBA is actually losing popularity? I think the ratings are down and you can't deny that, but like I'm not sure if the NBA is actually losing popularity.
Yeah, I would honestly go so far to say it's as popular as like actually popular as it's ever been, you know. But like I work with kids, they're not gonna sit and watch a game. Like you're not gonna have like middle schoolers, high schoolers sitting watching games. They're gonna be getting it from TikTok, they're gonna be getting it from YouTube Shorts, like they're gonna be getting highlights. That doesn't mean they don't like necessarily the product, but they don't have like, I don't know if it's like an attention span thing, but they don't have the drive to watch it the way that would be reflected by like views on or like viewership on TV.
Yeah, like Nielsen ratings. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't think a lot of them like feel the need to watch because I think the narratives that they care about are all just like online and like highlights and stat lines and like people talking on podcasts is mostly what they're interested in right now. So like,
And going off of kind of what Ike was saying, it's also, they're not following teams. Like kids nowadays don't like have like necessarily favorite teams. They have like players that they like. Right. And so some of those players, like, especially like, being in Minnesota, not a lot of these youths are necessarily Timberwolves fans, but they're still like LeBron fans, right? But you guys like some Ant fans, but they're not necessarily going to be tuning in for every Wolves game, right? That's like available for them, and so yeah.
Yeah, they'll sometimes maybe just look at the box score, see how Ant did, go look up his highlights package on YouTube, and kind of you know determine what they feel is happening from there. Yeah, a little bit to back that up, the NBA has 89 million followers on Instagram compared to the NFL, which is sort of like the prime American sport, that's ratings are untouchable pretty much, and that the NFL has 30 million followers on Instagram. I mean, part of that is that basketball is more of a global game, but also I think it does reflect kind of the viewership habits of the fan bases. I think, all right, you know what, we can circle back to this because you know I think it's an important topic towards the kind of fixing it thing, but let's get into some of these reasons that people are listing here. So the number one reason I would say that I'm seeing online is that teams are taking too many threes, right? Like and it's true. It's backed up statistically. Teams are taking a higher percentage of threes than any time in NBA history. And, you know, it varies by team. Like, the Celtics are the sort of prime example of this, with the team getting as many threes as possible. Part of it is it's an analytically sound model to shoot threes and layups. That's, like, those are the highest, you know, percentage. Well, high percentage in the paint, but also, you know, when you're shooting threes, it's better than the mid-range analytically. So a lot of teams have been relying on analytics, and we're sort of seeing kind of even more of a tilt in that direction. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this, and then I have some things.
You want to go first, Ike?
Sure. I mean, I think kind of maybe people like correlate with like threes and like way more points with just less defense. So I think maybe there's like less, that's implies less physicality, like less getting to the rim, less defense. So I think those are kind of like maybe like related.
Yeah, I would say number two reason is no defense.
I think, yeah, threes, no defense, kind of like are maybe just like huge reasons that go back to competition, which I think like, or lack thereof, like people kind of relate like you not playing defense to you not caring about a game, which I think that's probably like the core root, at least to this problem. But yeah, I don't know. That's kind of just what I make of it.
Yeah, I think that's a dumb argument. But like with just like people saying too many threes, like what do we want to see? Paul Pierce do a pull-up jumper? Like, is that a better product to seeing long twos and shit? It's like, it's not like people aren't getting to the rack. It's just that they're cutting out. Like the idea of it's more of an analytically sound shot is that you're not taking long twos, which are just as hard. It's worth less points. It's like, I don't want to see a pull-up mid-range. I'd rather someone take a three than that.
So this is perfect. This goes right into my point. And this is from the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, where they're sort of talking about this criticism. And this is from Nate Duncan. So in 2003-04, right, which is the first year that Cleaning the Glass started, like, you know, doing these movement type statistics, teams shot 18% of their shots as threes. So it's 42% now, right? So pretty dramatic shift there. But they shot 30% of their shots from long mid-range, right? So, like, you know, just inside the arc. And so overall, that's 48% of their shots as jumpers. And actually, so this year, it's 39% of shots from three and 7.4% long mid-rangers. Okay, so different statistics, whatever. So technically, in 2003-04, there's still more jump shots being taken than there are now as a percentage of all shots. The difference is that sort of mid-range shot, that sort of famous, like, what comes to mind is, like, Rondo driving and kicking to Kevin Garnett for that sort of signature mid-range shot. The difference is that that player, that whatever player's driving is kicking out to, is shooting a 23-foot three-point jump shot instead of a mid-ranger. I think I'm with you, Mike. Like, I think it's, like, you'd rather, I guess it's like, is there an inherent variability that's more entertaining to watching spot up mid-range jump shots as opposed to three-pointers?
I think also when you do have everyone on the three-point line, that does make the drives in, like, way different. Like, getting to the hoop in 2003, 2004 is, yeah, like,
it's much more
infinitely more yeah, difficult than getting to the rim now. So I think, I don't know this statistically, but, like, contested shots at the rim, I think, are probably, like, way, way down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's also, like, a part of it.
Sure.
But, yeah, you can't just leave people anymore either, right? Because everyone,
yeah,
at least, like, for the most part, everyone can shoot, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think something that, like, Bill Simmons and Russillo and stuff talk about a lot is, like, there's this sort of yearning for the past that's been going on. I don't know if you guys saw that sort of thing on Twitter that was, like, a compilation of, like, the Pistons that won the chip, and, like, T-Mac, and, like, mm-hmm, I don't know, all these sort of, like, mid 2000 stars. And it's funny because you look at that and it's just a slower product where there's guys, you know, posting up for, and I actually like post ups, you know, like I enjoy watching post ups.
Julius Randle.
But there's sometimes, but, you know, it's like there's like one guy doing something and nobody's moving around them, whereas offenses are so much more dynamic in the NBA right now.
I completely agree with you. Like, that Pistons scene, like, Ben Wallace is not fucking seeing the court on a lot of these teams nowadays.
No, yeah, and I think that's another thing that another guy, I think Sam Vecenie, made this point, was, like, do people maybe want to watch, like, less skilled role players? Because, you know, everyone that gets on the court can, for the most part, sort of shoot, dribble, and pass, right? And you know, there's a lot of exceptions to this, but for the most part, if you're getting in on the court, you can do all those things moderately well, or you're exceptional at a different thing, right? Whereas, like, I don't know if, like, Reggie Evans is seeing the court in 2025, listen, you know?
Maybe not Reggie Evans, but, like, Ben Wallace is, like...
Oh, I was exaggerating.
He could be, like, he's a perfect version of, like, Jared Vanderbilt, who could play, like, starting center and get, like, every rebound with also being able to defend and switch onto, like, a perimeter guy.
I was exaggerating with the Ben Wallace. I was
listen,
Ben Wallace.
Well, this is also kind of the part of it where, like, I think it's a lot more rare now to see the guys, like, it's kind of an exception to the guys who go 100%, 100% of the time. And, like, Ben Wallace was that. I mean, like, Vanderbilt kind of, Pat Bev, like, was an exception. I don't really.
If you drop a guy like Jared Sochan into the 2003, is he MVP?
No.
He still can't shoot, so I don't know. Maybe he was more built for that era. The other thing that has been talked about is this is something where I think that people want the NBA to be failing, is this notion that it's too political. So I do think there's some inherent sort of bias as to, like, what you want to happen if you think the NBA is too political. With that being said, during the bubble, the NBA came completely staunch on the side of the Black Lives Matter movement, and has sort of been on the forefront of that, a lot of these, like, social justice issues, and haven't been afraid to talk about them in a lot of ways. Also on Israel, I will say. But I think could there be some guy in rural Oklahoma who is like, I was going to tune in to the NBA, but they're too political now, so I am not going to watch? Maybe.
I mean, the NBA and, like, LeBron James specifically definitely didn't follow, like, the Michael Jordan, like, everyone buy shoes strategy.
Publicans buy Jordan.
Yeah. Right. Which, you know, I think there probably is a general, like, resentment from a lot of the country to, like, LeBron and Steph Curry, maybe specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how much that affects the numbers, because I don't know how much, like, the average, like, kind of not swing voter, but more central, like, less, like, Black Lives Matter. Like, I don't know how much that affects their enjoyment of basketball. Like, I can't imagine. It's a huge.
Yeah. If you like basketball, you're going to watch basketball, I think. There are probably some people out there that were like, oh, they're pushing this stuff that I don't agree with. I'm going to turn it off in a form of protest.
Yeah, I do think that exists 100%. And there's, like, seemingly media people who are trying to, like, feel that, like, a lot. Yes,
absolutely. Yeah, like Clay Travis.
Clay Travis.
Mike?
Yeah. I think I'd agree where I think it's, like, definitely a possibility, but again, that's just fucking stupid.
Yeah,
like,
I'd say it's low on the list.
You have a league made up 95%. Yeah, it's 95%, or, like, probably more than 95% black athletes. Like, what?
Yeah, what do you expect?
Talk about, like, the NFL, where it's true. Not 95%, but, like,
it's a high.
I think the social rights are a lot more, or social issues are a lot more locked down, but, and
I feel like it's kind of because the NBA is more of a player focused league than the NFL has ever been, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of, like, football is also an incredibly southern sport.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
So, like, I think it's a lot.
Yeah, it's probably the general viewership is probably leans a little bit more conservative than basketball.
Viewership and, like, actual members of the league too.
Certainly, yeah. So, and I don't know. I don't know if the league, like, cutting down on all political speech, I guess, would necessarily.
I don't think it would
lead to higher viewership. I don't think so. I think the people that were like, the NBA is too political, are gone, and maybe weren't really there to begin with. This one is interesting. Is load management. A lot of people, you know, I think it's a common experience for a lot of people around the country to tune in to a big nationally televised game, or even worse, you know, get tickets. For instance, yeah, like yesterday, my cousin.
Yeah, I literally know someone too. Yeah.
Yeah, my cousins, or my cousin and my uncle went to the Wolves game, and fully, you know, expecting to see LeBron James, who was not there for personal reasons.
Yeah, it's just like, what?
Yeah, and you know, we don't know what's going on there. There's some speculation that he just wanted to take a longer vacation, sort of with this kind of NBA Cup hiatus. He's also 40, you know, but with that being said, like, I think, I mean, we can get into the solutions later on, but there are just a ton of NBA games that really wear on players' bodies. And then also there's certainly a team-wide and a league-wide focus, I would argue, although they're trying to implement some things that go the other way, on emphasizing the playoffs and de-emphasizing the regular season, so teams feel they can load manage, but who that affects the most is the fans. And you know, I think that does affect viewership. If you tune into a game and the stars aren't playing, you're probably not going to watch that game.
Yeah. I was just like, this LeBron thing, it's like, it was announced a day before the game that he's not playing. It's not related to his injury. And when they ask JJ Redick about when he's going to be back, JJ Redick just says, I don't know. Like, yeah. That's not.
Yeah,
it's like,
weird.
You can't do that in football, like any league really, like, mm-hmm. I think it does all come back to like 82 games and LeBron having played 20 years in the league, knowing that it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, like, they might be out of the play-in though.
Yeah, but yeah.
I would agree. I do think that the amount of games aspect is a real like hindrance on the viewership, because some people don't really care about the NBA until like those Christmas games come up, right? That's mm-hmm. like the first day of people like start tuning in, right? Mm-hmm. I think if you look at like the model that the MLB has, like, they have far too many games. Like, no one gives a fuck about baseball, and people who even like baseball don't care the fuck about baseball until October or September, you know? Yeah. It just creates such a time period within the season that like it's like, eh, like who, like these games, how much do they really weigh out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we'll definitely circle back on that point later when we're talking about fixes. So this one was interesting. Let's hit this. There's too many upper-income players. So this is just another sort of objective fact about the NBA, is that the player base is coming from better and better, you know, more affluent families. And it has to do with access to things like AAU, being able to allocate resources and time to bring your kid to AAU games, getting a personal trainer, more so than past generations in the NBA, where there are a lot of players that, you know, made it out the mud, so to speak, and kind of got to the NBA through, you know, maybe not the best circumstances that were optimized to kind of developing their skills. And so what this person was arguing was that this sort of leads to kind of less hunger for playing hard every night, and kind of getting out there, and because that's sort of what these past players like had to leave it all out there to get to where they are, which, you know, I think could be true. And then that at the same time, there's less characters, and that part of this sort of maybe more affluent upbringing is a sort of self-awareness and media training that kind of makes the players sort of establish their own brands early with things like NIL and being sort of stars and having media access in high school to being less interesting as stars, I think. And something that I heard someone, I think some podcasts talk about was maybe being a basketball player is, you know, this sort of AAU kind of upbringing makes a better basketball player, but it actually doesn't necessarily make a better star. So we have less compelling stars right now is sort of the argument. What do you think of that, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I would actually really agree with that one, because I don't know how much you guys know about like the AAU circuit nowadays, but it's a cesspool of just like kids showing up to like, if you aren't on like the top team, you're just put in like back rooms and like have to like just pay $100,000 to play in these garbage tournament. No one's really watching you, and like these coaches and program directors are just lying to kids to get them into their programs, and then it's just kids have bad experiences, and kids kind of drop basketball together, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like it really is kind of separating like the kids who can afford to keep doing that versus the kids who can't, or the kids who are like good enough right away to be put on those best teams. Like, you don't have kids who are going to be like, hey, maybe you didn't make it your fifth and sixth grade year, but they keep grinding it out, right? Because they're just told, oh, this is what you're worth, and this is where you're going to be at.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it does kind of cut that aspect of it out. Right. It's like just kind of it's pushing kids who maybe could become great away from basketball because they're told at such a young age that, hey, you're not good enough to play on this top team. So we're just going to put you in this like church basement gym while everyone else is at this other court at the high school. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it kind of does go back to, though, like the difference between basketball now and basketball 20 years ago, where like kids are way more skillful because that's like the emphasis all of growing up is like shooting, like drip, like it's just so different, and maybe it's better in terms of skill but not necessarily like watchability. And like there were more characters 20 years ago, like, yeah, I don't know how you want to balance like trying to make the players better and like less cookie cutter, but
and I think some of that, and I feel like kind of with that is like some of that passion is kind of gone because of AAU. Like they're playing in tournaments every weekend. They don't care if they win or lose. Like they're moving high schools like every season. Like they're not like working with the same group of guys for 4 years to try to like win their district or whatever. They can just go to a different place, you know. It's like,
yeah,
that'll get them the next, and there's no shame in that for the kids because that's how they need to be able to get noticed. But it's just kind of, I think it changes the priorities.
I don't really know how you necessarily fix that like through coaches, though, because like I think the objective of every single coach is to like develop like the skills that like are going to make him the best player. Like, I don't know how you tweak what you tell a coach to coach, or like what you say to a coach about that. I think
there's got to be like, and this is a different conversation kind of surrounding like youth basketball, but there's got to be rules against like even with that, this OTE shit that they do, like this, I think this is kind of like, I think it's kind of bullshit beyond, but like, I don't think there should be schools like fucking IMG that just take the best kids from like random states and have them travel around on a national circuit. I think that's kind of bullshit. You know, it's like, I think that there should be more strict rules on like where kids can go play basketball based off where they live. You know, like, I don't think kids just be going to these made up like high schools that just like,
I
don't
think
actually
that goes
teach.
Like a lot, that probably goes a lot farther than basketball, you know.
Yeah,
but like educate, yeah, I don't know.
I think there is sort of a point about how kind of the player empowerment movement in the NBA has sort of bled down to like things with the transfer portal in college,
yeah,
and then what you're referring to in youth basketball,
highlight culture too.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, there is so much that centers around the players that sometimes the fans are cut out at times.
Yeah.
From the, yeah. a product, I guess. Yeah, I think right. I think this point about there's like less characters also kind of showed itself in this Netflix show Starting Five. I watched about 2.5 episodes of it. And you know, Anthony Edwards is a good character. You know, he says what it's on his mind. He's funny. He's sort of naturally charismatic. LeBron, Jimmy, Tatum, and Sabonis are just snooze jobs. You know, especially Tatum and Sabonis. I would say like the only thing that you learned about Jason Tatum is like, oh yeah, I love my family.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, oh, fascinating.
Yeah. You know about Deuce?
Yeah, like I love God and I love my family. It's like, wow.
Yeah,
what a compelling character. So
that's another thing, though, where like, there's what do you do to fix? That's just like such a huge fix, like not conceptual. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think there can be conversations around like access. To basketball.
He went to like prep school. Like he went to the same one as Bradley. I think Bradley Beal went to, like in Missouri or whatever.
Who?
He went to a prep school. Jason Tatum.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Jimmy and LeBron are more of this other generation of stars. I think this previous generation of stars, but still.
I mean LeBron's like. Definitely had like final cut and like would never like knows exactly what he's saying at all times if there's a camera on him.
Okay, let's get through the last couple ones. Bad atmospheres at arenas. I think this one's
wouldn't know. Wouldn't know.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, you know, growing up in Minnesota, there's some certainly some empty games about right that now. We went to.
Yeah.
Yeah, right now
that was all. That's what they deserved. Yeah. You know, that's how it should be.
I mean, I remember us and like the 300 people that were there were fucking going nuts after that Chase Buttinger game-winning layup.
You could hear the guy who spent $4 to sit in like 215 screaming at LeBron James the entire game. Those people had voices. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, you know.
But that was all related to the play on the floor.
Right. You know? Right, so that was a really bad team. A number of bad teams.
Yeah.
And I think that's a tough one because it's going to be hard to replicate like a big basketball college's atmosphere, you know.
You know, student section.
The Clippers wall section has not been impressive. Like the 3 or 4 games I've watched.
Yeah, living out on the East Coast, the Clippers game is always like the late game, and you know my girlfriend falls asleep, and I will watch the second half of the Clippers game. I think the wall was there.
It's like 8 dudes going like LAC, LAC that you like can kind of hear, and then you hear like the super piped in chants or whatever that they do.
Maybe some paid actors there as well.
Yeah.
So I do think there's a wider conversation about ticket prices and how, you know, every year they just go up and up and up. And obviously, you know, it's like there's inflation and things get more expensive inherently. With that being said, I do think it is a little ridiculous at times. When, you know, I live close by the Barclays Center, and when there's a crappy team in town, for a lower level ticket to be over $100 is,
yeah,
I don't know. That doesn't feel right. And I think a lot of fans are feeling that way as well.
Yeah, it's just like when you see, this is like a constant complaint that I don't know how, like if you can, but like how do you have just like 70-60%, that might be a bit much, like empty stadiums, and then like just enforcing like seating like at old
that's the craziest games. Part about it
like just it's being like, Nazis dude, about that so true. And then
this is a great point.
Like and then like yeah charging like $80 to sit like five rows off the court when you could walk down there after 30 seconds into the game after spending like $4.
You should be funneling everyone closer after the game starts.
Yeah.
If their sell seats aren't like sold. Yeah. Like, it makes no sense why you'd want open seats lower built. Like, it just like baffles me.
I also had a business idea of, this is probably not feasible, so feel free to steal this. But having the tickets just go down dramatically in price as the game goes.
So you can buy it like live moment.
Yeah, so it's like if I live at Barclays, or you know, if I live within like a 20-minute walk of Barclays Center, I could, you know, I see the Nets tickets are, you know, half off at halftime. Yeah. I'd be like, you know, whatever. It's
yeah, I don't get like hour. Why teams don't do that. It's like just make it cheaper. You'll sell like I mean they must have models where they don't think it makes sense, but like. I don't get it. Like charging $90 for a lower deck seat the entire time. And a lot of it is resale. So I guess you would, I don't know.
Right. Yes. I mean, it's hard to control, but
yeah,
whatever.
We got into the WNBA finals for upper deck for like the finals for like $95 a ticket, you know?
Yeah. That was pre Caitlin Clark era though, right?
No, that was this year.
Oh, that was this year. Finals
with the
wins. Nice.
And the stadium was rocking.
Yeah, yeah. You know, hey, great atmosphere for Liberty games, I will say. Much more than Nets
games.
Fuck
those Liberty. Those
I've never been, but that's what I hear. okay, so part of this is also that there's too many subscriptions to watch games. I think that's more of a sort of cord cutting kind of larger conversation around like, is it actually cheaper? But I do think like the League Pass blackout thing is very antiquated. And the fact that like these regional sports networks who are some, you know, hemorrhaging money, you know, you either have to have a cable subscription or you pay like a direct-to-consumer thing that is going to be more expensive or even a comparable price to League Pass is a little ridiculous, and I think the NBA could be doing something about that as well.
Do you know what the setup is like for next year? Like what Prime and Peacock, is that just going to be like, again, like certain games?
Yeah.
That's just like, because like the NHL right now has like literally every game on ESPN streaming.
Right.
So unless it's like local, I wasn't sure if they were.
No, I would assume that it's going to be a similar model with like League Pass.
Yeah.
And League Pass local blackout as well.
Yeah. So I guess like having League Pass be its own thing might not, or like probably doesn't help. Because like nobody subscribes to League Pass, like people subscribe to ESPN, who then like also happen to have every NHL game,
right?
Yeah, that's what. Because like the only sports thing I subscribe to is like to watch ESPN, and you get every single college basketball game, like every college basketball game on TV, like men's and women's. You get every college football game. I'm gonna watch ESPN, but like for NFL and for NBA, like I'll just illegally stream. Like it's so easy, and I feel like that's also where kids in high school and college, like they're not gonna pay that shit. They're just gonna go on Reddit Mark. NBA streams.
careful. We'll be knocking at your door soon. Yeah, I think that those are valid. I'm hoping. I've sort of said this sentiment before, but I'm hoping like Amazon just buys all the regional sports networks and then throws them on Prime, and you can just like not have a local blackout and watch your team's game. I think this local blackout thing also goes back to something you were saying earlier, Mike, where kids are fans of stars and players and not their local teams. And it's, I think, you know, part of that is because there this access is just more difficult for your local team, which is ridiculous because, you know, it's over the air for Vikings games, right? Like, it's like you don't even need cable to watch a Vikings game.
I was gonna say I'm not necessarily sure what you're talking about totally, because I like never have to deal with the local blackouts,
right? So on League Pass, right, like you
can't watch
the Nets or the Knicks, right? And yeah. When I'm in Minnesota, I go on the League Pass app, I can't watch the Timberwolves on the League Pass app because of the, like, there's a, you know,
yeah,
a deal with the local cable company, the local regional sports network, to broadcast on cable, and it's to like prevent people, you know, I don't know, whatever. It's a League Pass thing, but I think they could expand access to people in a more accessible way that it doesn't require, like, it does feel a little ridiculous if you're paying $17-$18 a month to watch your like one basketball team, you know. Okay, so let's talk about some fixes. And before we get there, I think I want to say, like, I don't know how much the NBA is worried about this.
Yeah.
Right? Because the TV deal. Know? What?
You say you don't know how much they're worried about it?
Yeah, I don't know how much the league itself is actually worried about the ratings going down, because the TV deal has been secured for, and they don't have to worry about it for 11 years, right? And who knows what's going to happen next year, let alone 11 years from now. And this problem was sort of pre-existing before the TV deal was signed, like ratings going down since 2016 probably, and it's sort of unclear, but you know, ESPN, NBC, Amazon, they're all willing to shell out millions and millions of dollars for less games, essentially. So you know, there's no guarantee of them doing that again, but it seems like the advertisers were willing to back this product that, you know, is the ratings are going down, but it seems like everything's okay. So does the NBA actually care about the ratings going down is a valid question, I think.
I don't think it's something that they're urgently worried about at all, especially considering they just signed that TV deal.
Yeah.
I saw something that Adam Silver said he's like not worried about it, and that like they don't even like compare themselves to like sports leagues at this point. They compare themselves to like international brands, because they were like a top five like search, like just NBA and like NBA content was like a top five search in the world like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So like he keeps harping on this like social media stuff kind of, where he's like, this is where our focus is. Like this is, yeah, the few, I don't know.
And he might just be right too. Like at the end of the day,
I mean, it's all about,
does it revenue matter all that much? Like if they, but like if they are getting, like if they do already have that deal signed, right? And they are like produced like for online, like there is some sort of like revenue, I'm sure, that they're taking in from being so actively like sought after. So like maybe they're just first ones in line to like be jumping to that next kind of wave of consumerism, in which like it's not about TV views, it's about how much people are like interacting with your product online,
right?
I think
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay, so it's like it's impossible to compete with the NFL sports wise because there's 17 games. And like it's appointment viewing, right? And it's just like ingrained in so much of culture. But it's you know, but there, what the NBA is essentially competing with is everything that is available to stream, essentially, right? Like, you sit down on your couch at the end of the day and you're like, okay, do I lock in on Hornets Pistons or maybe I watch like a Netflix show, you know, or a show on Max or whatever. So like, maybe it's right to not sort of obsess over TV ratings, which does, I don't know how they get those analytics, and it still does feel like an antiquated way of looking at things, especially because TV ratings in general have been going down for everything outside of football, including news, including, you know, other sort of network TV. So I think maybe he is right to not necessarily worry about that. With that being said, we are going to fix the NBA.
Can I toss one more problem?
Go ahead.
This is 60 to 70% serious. It is way worse to gamble on the NBA than the NFL.
It's so fucking frustrating to gamble on the NBA. It's such bullshit.
Like, be it games or player props, like, it's kind of goes back to the same issue where, like, oh, like, if they're losing at the end of the third quarter, they might just stop trying. Like, you can't, it's so much less dependable in terms of effort and, like, consistency.
Yes, but I what I would counter that with is that in the modern NBA, there are such vast amounts of swings in runs that, like, if a team is down by 20 at the end of the third quarter, they could very well win by 20 as well.
Yeah, that's true.
That happens on a nightly basis.
All right, there's not 40-point swings on a nightly basis entering the fourth quarter.
Okay, fine. A nightly basis is an exaggeration, but a, you know, a weekly basis, easily.
Yeah, but, like, going to, like, player props and stuff like that, like, going into an NFL game, you might be like, I don't trust this guy because he's not, like, that good. Going into an NBA game, you'd just be like, I don't trust this guy because he might not try. And it's like,
or he might just kind of sit the last,
or not necessarily not try, but just like something weird might happen where, like, you don't necessarily know that he's gonna play the entire game.
But wouldn't
you say that, like, a running back easily could, like, twist their ankle or something, and you?
But it never feels like it's because, like, they're not. It always is, like, maybe an injury, but, like, they're always trying to compete.
Yeah.
Where, like, with the NBA, you see, like, James Harden, you bet, like, over 40 combined whatever, and he's, like, walking down the court when you need him to get, like, 15 more.
Another rebound.
God fucking
damn it. And you're just begging him to get an assist. He's just standing in the corner.
Standing in the corner.
James Harden.
All right. You know,
pouting in the corner.
All right. Yeah, the fine. throw it down on the list. Okay, so let's get into some fixes before we get out of here. I think the thing that everyone agrees on is less games, right?
Which is just, like, the worst thing, because there's no way it's going to happen.
Yeah. I guess so, you know,
because, like, there's no way they sign, like, an 11-year TV deal and then they're like, all right,
season,
fewer games.
But those are the TV deals are with the nationally televised games. I think those companies would be willing to do that. It wouldn't, I doubt it would take away anything from the nationally televised games. I think there could be an equal number of nationally televised games and cut down on the 82-game season.
But they don't make money from, like, local networks?
No. Because the local networks, the regional sports networks have a different TV deal with the NBA.
Okay,
but I don't know where that's at, but that's, you know, it's a different deal.
Okay. I do, yeah.
I have a pretty real fix I've been thinking about. And so you could do this two ways, right? You could have it only be like throughout the whole season, and it's kind of go with shrinking games. The Western Conference only plays the Western Conference. The Eastern Conference only plays the Eastern Conference. Kind of like how they used to do baseball, right? And then like finally they meet in the finals, right? Mm-hmm. It would kind of make those games being a little bit more, and it could. And you mentioned something about rivalries in the text earlier, and we didn't really talk about that.
Yeah, missed that one. But, like, I feel about this, but go ahead.
Okay. Because I feel like teams don't have that. Like, who gives a fuck about division games? No one gives a god. Like, no one cares at all about like playing teams in your divisions anymore, right? Or my other thing was split the league in half, like top and bottom, and have a relegation system where the top two and bottom two flip after the season. And
with the G League.
Yeah, but like you don't have to add more teams. Just go like, or like add like make it 20 and 20. I don't know. But,
yeah. Oh, I see. Split the league into two and make the relegation system. Okay. Yeah. And then make the bottom half teams play in their G League affiliate stadiums.
Yes. Yeah. The Bulls don't get to play at the United States anymore. Yeah. They're going to fucking
Or they have to play outside or something.
Yeah. We're going to Gary.
So my fix was a similar thing, and I think this would be sort of under the presumption that they won't, you know, they will not cut games, right? I think, you know, the divisions should matter. And it's something that I think about sometimes is how, Mike, you don't necessarily care about the success or the failure of the Timberwolves, but you absolutely are invested in the success or the failure of the Vikings because of that divisional rivalry and how much the divisions matter, right? Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, vice versa. But, like, to introduce more of a playoff model with divisions, I think, could be really helpful. And then maybe cut down on some of the other, you know, every team plays the other conference or the same conference teams like four times, right? Like cut down on those games, increase the divisional games, and then make the divisions matter in terms of the playoff seeding. And I actually don't really understand how the divisions work in the NFL, but I feel like there could be a model from that.
A similar one, yeah.
Yeah,
that would work. Like every team that wins a division gets a home game. And it's like seeded from there,
right?
So like it would be like the top four.
Yeah, I think that would be great. And then it would be those divisional games would matter more than anything, you know. And it would be electric, I think.
Yeah, I think they did like a light version of that with like the NBA Cup, where they
split them into divisions. Like they split them into these randomized groups, and it was a great opportunity to make them divisions. But maybe this should be a thing that comes after expansion, and presumably they'll have these four team divisions like the NFL, where they could kind of implement something like this. What do you say, Mike?
I do love that, but I also think they got to reconfigure where each team is, what division teams are in, because like right now, like I don't even think the conferences necessarily make all that much sense with some of the teams, unless I'm just map illiterate. But I guess it also impacts like teams that have moved in the past and didn't necessarily switch over conferences.
You know, Detroit is further east than Atlanta, Mike.
I know. I've seen that a lot on Twitter and TikTok over the past. But it's crazy. It's nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, there will be some flipping around of one of the Western Conference teams.
Like the Wolves should not be in the same division as the Trailblazers. It makes no sense.
So for East and West, if they do expansion, it would be like two new West teams, probably like the Sonics and like Las Vegas. So I think you could probably kick out like Memphis and New Orleans.
No. You'd only do one.
Or yeah.
If they're adding.
Yeah. So you'd add one. Wait.
You're adding one Western Conference team would go to the East, and then
yeah.
It's just you're right.
Yeah, and then they'll be balanced.
So I think Memphis.
No, the Timberwolves should be in the Eastern Conference.
You're staying in the West, Sam, and you're going to like it.
No.
You just got to hope that.
It'll be the Wolves, Milwaukee,
Chicago,
and Cleveland.
Detroit.
Yeah,
and like it should just be the perfect division. Like, that is the most understandable division.
Geographically makes sense, and then, you know, maybe there'll be some, like, rivalries.
It does kind of suck that, like, Minnesota and Wisconsin are in different conferences.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Like, it's always been kind of like...
It's like you have three teams in the same fucking lake. Like, it just makes itself...
It's true. Yeah. So, some things that... people have proposed as fixes, moving back the 3-point line or eliminating corner threes.
I saw one suggestion to move the 3-point line forward.
Oh,
just make like a straight line.
No, just make it a college 3-pointer, clot everything up.
Clunk it up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like,
wait, can I talk about getting rid of the, so they're saying like, just draw the 3-point line so it goes out of bounds before the corners.
Correct.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's like that would destroy like how the game,
careers,
like the entire geometry of the game would just completely change. Yeah. I do think there is an interesting conversation as to like if they expanded the court horizontally and had the corner threes be the same
deeper,
distance.
They could just make the court like 1.5x bigger.
That might be a little dramatic. and then play 11s.
Or go like baseball. That's every team, just make their court however they want.
Baseball, yeah.
Some other fixes: making dunks count as 3 points. To encourage
that everyone can dunk.
Right, yeah, so...
You know. Rudy Gobert is now an analytic monster.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's exactly, yeah. Rudy Gobert, leading scorer in the NBA. Making threes count as 2.5.
I'm not doing all that math. That's crazy.
I like it.
It's crazy. Like half points, I'm not so sure about. I think also, like, this is sort of going back to what we were talking about earlier with, like, this obsession over threes. When the same number of jump shots have been taken, whatever. Another thing that is a sort of hobby horse for me, and you guys know this, but I think they should get rid of a timeout. I think they should get rid of the challenges. I think there's a ton of, especially with ESPN, you know, especially because the ESPN viewership numbers are what we're talking about here, is like, you know, the ESPN halftime, I think they had like a minute, you know, during the finals.
30 dudes.
And it's like, why just squeeze so much? It does feel like when there's a close game on national TV, there's just as much squeeze out of that time because there's the most eyeballs on the game during that last part where there's so many commercial breaks. And it just feels so short-sighted and so many reviews. And like it just feels like they're trying to milk as much as that out of there while hurting the product.
I don't hate the idea. I wish they could do something like the NFL does with like expedited challenges. You know, where like when teams challenge, do they do that kind of a little in the NBA? Like sometimes when it's so obvious that they like don't even make the refs go to like the screen.
No, it's always the ref. They have people like up, like they have refs upstairs who like can overturn the call of the ref on the field.
Yeah, no, there's a replay center in Secaucus that the refs are always talking to whenever the green light goes off. Sometimes it does go quicker than others, they still have to go and talk to the people at the monitor regardless of how long it takes, But it does, yeah, I don't know. I think they could cut down on the speed of that as well.
Yeah, the way they bring out the monitor, the refs like put on two pairs of headphones,
Kennedy's like, the play is being challenged.
Yeah. You should only be able to look at it once at normal speed, and if they don't see anything egregious, then it's no change.
Also, this is a small thing. I know we're going long, but I hate the fucking thing where someone, like, a ball is knocked out of someone's hands and then they do it on super slow motion. So, like, when maybe the last little fingernail is on, like, the player's hands, whose ball it gets knocked out of, and they, like, that's so stupid. You know, that's so dumb. It's not basketball. Okay. Any other fixes that you want to talk about? I have a thought that the it might all just fix itself when Cooper Flagg comes into the league
and savior.
and brings all those whites back. Yeah, suddenly the right wing is extremely just locked in on you know, like
when he's on the Pelicans Hornets
basketball,
Gonna say just like fine dudes for not playing, but they just don't give a shit.
Like, what's $5,000?
I mean, I see
the fines.
Yeah, they're also trying to like do stuff with the 65 game rule with the awards and stuff, but it doesn't stop Embiid from being like,
I see like Anthony Edwards get fined like $15,000 for just walking by like a fan and flicking him off. And it's just like, yeah, you don't give a shit.
No.
Like, Ron Artest beat the fuck out of people back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, he was suspended. All right. I have some closing thoughts. First of all, something that I've been thinking about is like, maybe we can't, we don't want to get in the trap of what happened with the Democrats and talking about the economy, right? Where, you know, a lot of people are feeling that the economy is bad. And the Democrats said, no, the economy is good. Look at like the GDP growth and the unemployment rate and all these, you know, economic metrics that we're looking at, where people were at home were like, my lived experience is that the economy is bad. And I think that there is sort of this notion of kind of what we talked about with like the threes actually being okay, and like there's defensive versatility, and like, I, you know, maybe the NBA product for us isn't flawed, but maybe the main point and the biggest problem for the NBA is that everyone thinks that there's a problem with the NBA right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it would be silly to ignore this conversation. And I think they can't just sort of relax and sit on their hands and kind of let these social media analytics go when people aren't tuning into the product. So I will leave you with a quote from r/Bill Simmons. Regular guy, up working construction at 6 a.m. Couple nips of Seagram's in his Dunkin'. Down from two packs a day to one. Comes home from work and jerks off with his calloused hand just to get over with. Just to get it over with. Drinks a 12-pack of Bush and drives to his ex-wife's house and sits outside in the car a couple houses down for an hour just to see what she's up to. New boyfriend thinks he's hot shit because he's the boss at Cheesecake Factory and he's always bringing stuff home. Adam Silver doesn't have anyone like that in the room with him, so he doesn't know what that guy wants.
Yeah.
And what's worse is I don't think he cares.
No. Really well put. You know what that guy also
wants the mid-range too. That's all he's asking for.
He wants the mid-range too. He wants hardwood that is the color of hardwood, not bright orange.
Mm-hmm.
Preach.
And less TikTok.
Yeah. Less TikTok.
Thank you. Last two are complaints that I also share, yes.
All right.
All right. Anyone else have anything further?
Yeah, so
all right, I gotta head out, Mike. I'm just gonna cut you off there quick.